interrogation, 30th December 2013 to the 5th of January 2014. The police station is an old colonial-era building with a grand staircase leading through an arched doorway decorated with what once must have been ornate filigree, but is now chipped and faded. It's a single-storey limestone building that looks strong and squat and completely out of place in the tiny alley crowded with crumbling concrete apartments. By the time we arrive, it is almost midnight, and the lights cast a dim, sulphurous glow over the building's entrance. Fami and I are cuffed together as we're led inside, his good left arm chained to my right, while his right arm hangs in its sling. Inside, the rooms are bare and filthy. The police office is dank and dimly lit by a single, naked bulb hanging from the ceiling. As always, it smells of stale cigarette smoke, and there are butts and ash littering the floor, but the officer in charge is disarmingly friendly. He and Fami know each other, and the two exchange greetings. They met when Fami worked on a story for CNN about a year ago. For a moment, I begin to hope that the first friendly face of the evening might actually give us a way out. Instead, he confiscates our wallets, belts, and shoes, leaving me with my Akubra. But he is surprisingly sloppy with his search, and although I'm still worried, I have to suppress a grin when he misses the thick wad of $100 bills tucked inside my fleece. Then he leads us to a large arched steel door with detailed decorative welding. As he fiddles with the lock, I can hear people shuffling inside. The door swings open. Hands unlock our cuffs from behind and push us inside. The cell is a tall, bare limestone room with no windows and an alcove set into the opposite end. It isn't big, 1.5 body lengths wide and only slightly longer, and has no water or toilet. The ceiling is decorated with a plaster rosette. The room looks as though it was designed as an office for a colonial official rather than a holding cell for suspected criminals, and it is already overcrowded, with 9 men, most of them sitting on thin blankets spread across the floor. I stare down at them and wonder where Fami and I will fit. I needn't have worried. A massive Egyptian who reminds me of Mullah Rabbani with his thick black beard and wide neck stands in the alcove and orders his cellmates to make space for us. He is clearly the cell leader, and they shuffle over without complaint. The men are unexpectedly welcoming, offering us leftover bread and fried chicken that one of the prisoners' families brought in earlier that night. They tell us they've all been locked in the tiny room for weeks. In a small but extraordinary act of generosity, one man sees how much pain Fami's arm is causing him and hands him a small pillow, a precious commodity on the cold concrete floor. The big man introduces himself as Muhammad. He tells us that he ran a gym, for bodybuilders unsurprisingly, and that he's been accused of training Muslim Brotherhood militants. Another of our cellmates says he's a clothing retailer, without explaining how he wound up in the cell. He is well-dressed with a tailored shirt and pants, and has a close-cropped beard. In broken, friendly English, he asks how much my hat cost. I lie. A third looks like a heroin addict, struggling to cope with withdrawal symptoms, face the colour of cigarette ash and eyes vacant. He has a bulbous, hooked nose and misshapen head, and he eats in sullen silence. Muhammad says this man is a Syrian with mental problems who was arrested after he murdered 3 people at a pro-government demonstration, apparently for money. Muhammad tells us he has a mobile phone hidden in the cell. We don't ask how he smuggled it in. He offers to let us make a quick call or send an SMS, but in a moment of supreme frustration, I realise that I can't remember a single phone number apart from my ex-wife's. It was a difficult breakup, and in my sleep-deprived mind, I imagine that she'd be quite delighted to hear I've been locked up. I decide to let Fami make the call. He manages to get through to his uncle, a retired cop who's already heard of our arrest. Apparently, it's all over the news and social media. It's not just the two of us who've been picked up. Another producer, Baha Mohammed, has also been arrested. The police apparently raided his home in New Cairo and shot his dog in the process, terrifying his wife and 2 children. Baha is a soft-hearted, charming man with an extraordinary knack for talking the most recalcitrant person into giving interviews. He and I went horse riding in the desert a few nights ago, and I can't believe he too has been locked up somewhere. And then there is cameraman Muhammad Fawzi, another gentle giant who was also arrested in a raid on his home. I worked with Fauzi once on the front lines of Somalia, where I came to respect both his enormous compassion and his courage. Four of us, all under arrest. I can't make up my mind whether the fact that the story is in the media is a good thing or not. If it is now public knowledge, our chances of having this resolved quickly and quietly has probably gone. But if everybody already knows we're in the cells, it will be much harder for us to disappear. As the night deepens, the atmosphere in the cell becomes surprisingly jovial. Everyone talks and laughs constantly, giggling at their own jokes, singing songs, telling stories. But because I can't understand Arabic or take part in the banter, it just becomes noise. I try to sleep on the blanket, fully clothed, with my fleece for a pillow and my hat pulled down over my eyes, but the cold keeps seeping into my hips and shoulder, and the ache becomes impossible to ease as I turn and roll, trying to find a comfortable position. I can't imagine how Fami is managing on the floor with his bad shoulder. The incessant chatter, once amusing, is now infuriating. I'm stressed and tired and I can't think straight. I know I'll need all my mental faculties if we're going to get through this intact, and I badly need some rest. Finally, around 4 a.m, they stop talking and I settle into a light sleep, nose to tail with my neighbours across the cell and with the Syrian's feet digging into my ribs.